Well, let's turn to the book of Daniel for our scripture reading. Daniel chapter 7. And I'm going to read this. I'm going to say more about it, Lord willing, in a teaching time. But let me just read from chapter 7, verse 19 through the end of the chapter, verse 28. And let me just say one word about it as we read it, and then I'll say more about it, Lord willing, in a minute. But just want to observe the fact that this is fundamentally describing the political situation at the time of Christ's second coming, the political situation in the world. Okay, so let me read, starting in verse 19. It says, "Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet. The meaning of the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and before which three of them fell, namely that horn." Now, just say here, the horn here is generally understood to be, this is the Antichrist, the one world ruler. It says, "That horn which had eye and mouth, uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the ten horns, out of this kingdom ten kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue three kings. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Most High, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdom under the whole heavens will be given to the people of the saints of the Highest One. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions will serve and obey him." At this point, the revelation ended. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts were greatly alarming me, and my face grew pale, but I kept the matter to myself. All right, before I get started here, does everybody have the new chart? I love these charts. This is what I, now you know how I spend all my time. These are all made on Excel. Does anybody need one? There are some in the back there. This is a new one. This is a different one. On the Great Tribulation. Does anybody? Mark, can you get one for Kevin? Thank you. Now, as you know, the last couple of weeks, we have been looking at really what the Bible has to say about the Middle East at the time of Christ's second coming. And my purpose, again, in doing this has been fundamentally this, to help us to look at what's happening in the world and to be able to look at it from a biblical perspective. Again, all of you know that the Middle East has always been, for the last at least 50 years, 75 years, has been a center of conflict, not just for the Middle East itself, but for the world. And if you know anything about foreign affairs in the past 75 years, you know that we have come to the brink of a world war several times in the Middle East in the last 50 years. Because, as you know, the United States backs Israel, and Russia has always historically backed Syria and Iran and Egypt, and that's still true. And so oftentimes these conflicts that have come up have often brought Russia and the U.S. in particular to the brink of conflict. And so we want to look at these things from a biblical perspective. We want to ask the question, what does the Middle East have to do with the last days? And what is it that we should be looking for? And so we talked a little bit about the Middle East situation as it is today. We talked a little bit about, we kind of gave an overview of biblical eschatology, you know, what is coming according to the Bible in the future, and what are the events around the second coming. And then we started last week to look at the relationship between, specifically the relationship between the Middle East and the second coming. I mean, what is it that we're actually looking for? And last week we covered something that really has already begun, and that is the return of Israel to the land. Now, I spent most of last week on that, and to be honest, I want that to be clear in our minds, because when you look at all the promises in the Old Testament regarding the people of Israel, the Jews, descendants of Abraham through Isaac and Jacob, you look at all the promises to those people that they would come back to the land and be blessed. They're overwhelming in terms of just number and detail of the prophecies that have never been fulfilled. And the fact that we have Jews in the land today, in Israel, as a nation, to me is very significant for speaking about the return of Christ. Okay, so that's where we wanted to begin. That's where that's what we talked about last week. What I want to do, and I am going to finish this tonight. Okay, whatever happens, we are going to finish this tonight. We're going to look at three more things that relate the Middle East to the second coming of Christ. And then, now next week we don't have Sunday night, but the following week, Lord willing, what I do want to do is take one night, one Sunday night, and give you an overview of the history of this conflict in the last 100 years. In other words, a history of Zionism, how it came that the Jews came back to Israel, how they became a nation, what is the conflict about, what have the wars been. You know, you've heard of maybe the 1967 Six-Day War, and you heard about the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Now, how do these relate, and what has the progression of this conflict been? And I'm going to try to do that just in one Sunday night, and probably give you a PowerPoint, because to really understand it, you really need to see things like maps and stuff like that, which is fun for me. You know, I love maps. So instead of a chart next time, we'll have a PowerPoint, Lord willing. And we'll look at that. But tonight we do want to finish up this question of the Middle East and what the Bible has to say about the Middle East and the Second Coming. And let me introduce them together, and then I'll go through them individually. What is clear, again, if you understand that the Old Testament has much to say about the Second Coming, which I think, and I've tried to show, if there's one thing that's obvious, it is that world events will revolve around the Middle East at the end of the age. In other words, and particularly the nation of Israel. In fact, what you find at the end of the age fundamentally is that Israel is a stumbling block for the whole world. Now again, that so perfectly fits what's going on today that it's hard to believe that there are people out there that say these events don't have any significance for the return of Christ. I don't understand that. Because everything that is happening today is like clearly pointing to what the Old Testament has said is going to happen. That at the end of the age, the whole world will be opposed to the nation of Israel. Now you realize, and I'll say more about this, Lord willing, next time, you realize that, you know, the stated goal of all these Arab countries and all of these Arab groups and Muslim groups, without exception, when you talk about Saudi Arabia, Iran, the PLO, or the Palestinian Authority, Egypt, all of these governments, their stated objective is the destruction of Israel. They don't want peace. You know, I hope you know that. Talking about peace is always just preparation for the next war. But they're very open about what they want. They have no intention of making peace with Israel. Their intention is to destroy Israel. They want Israel off the map. Now again, that's exactly what the Old Testament speaks of. Their goal, again, the Palestinian Authority has clearly stated this, their goal is to start a war that will result in the annihilation of Israel. And there's no... this isn't rocket science. Now, that fits very much into what the Bible says is going to happen at the time of Christ's second coming. And there are three events in particular, that I want to observe tonight. And I give these to you so that you understand, as you're watching these events in the Middle East, what they're working toward. I mean, what it's moving toward relentlessly. And it will happen because God said so. Okay, no matter how rebellious man is, and no matter who's behind it or why they're doing it, we know how it's going to take place because the Bible says how it's going to take place. And there are three things, and these are the three. I'll introduce them and then I'll expand them. The first one is this, which I mentioned last week. There will be, and this is the next thing, there will be a peace treaty. A peace treaty between a particular political leader in the world and the nation of Israel. And that political leader, although at the time he will not be the world ruler, he will eventually be the Antichrist. He is that prince, as he's called. That treaty may or may not, I rather suspect it will, but it may or may not follow a war. As you know, most peace treaties follow wars. But we don't know that. The Bible, I don't think the Bible reveals that. It may or may not flow out of a war be preceded by a war, but there will be a treaty between the nation of Israel and a world ruler that will give it peace, finally. Something it hasn't had. Okay, and that peace won't last very long, but that's how the tribulation will begin. And I'll show you why we believe that, or why I believe that. The second event is at the end of the tribulation. Again, if you have the new chart here, again, I'm not going to go through all this in detail, but I put it for you for your reference. If you see at the beginning of the tribulation is the event, the peace between the Antichrist and Israel. That technically is what begins the tribulation. Not technically the rapture. The rapture precedes the treaty. We don't know by how much time. I suppose it could be 5 minutes. I suppose it could be 5 days. I suppose it could be 5 months. I mean, God knows. But the rapture, I believe, will precede the treaty. At the end of this seven-year period, you see, there's the second coming of Christ, or, as it is sometimes called, Armageddon. You've all heard of Armageddon, right? Armageddon is the final battle when Christ comes. It's actually when he returns, he destroys the armies that are gathered together at Armageddon. And their purpose for being at Armageddon, do you know why they're at Armageddon? They're there to destroy Israel. Okay? They have gathered against Jerusalem and Israel to destroy the Jews. All the nations will be gathered together to fight and to destroy the Jewish people, Israel. And I think you might even be able to argue that they will be gathered together specifically to actually fight against the Messiah himself. You have to understand, by the time the middle of the tribulation, the world will openly be literally worshiping Satan. Okay, so these people, I think they will be looking for Christ to return. This sounds strange, I know, but I think they will, and they will be seeking to destroy him. But they are there fundamentally to destroy the Jews, according to the Old Testament. Okay, so that's the second event, Armageddon, which is clearly, yes. When you take the passages together from the Old Testament and the book of Revelation, it would appear that there is literally most of Israel is one huge battlefield. All the way from the valley of Jezreel, which is kind of in the north up there, where a lot of the battles and judges took place, all the way down to Bozra, which is down by Edom. I mean, that's most of Israel. And then it mentions also, well, I don't know off the top of my head, I don't remember where the Valley of Megiddo is. It also mentions the Valley of Jehoshaphat, which is around somewhere near Jerusalem. So in other words, it appears that all the armies of the world are gathered together in the land of Israel to annihilate the Jews, to annihilate. Remember in Revelation chapter 12, it speaks of Satan pursuing the woman who gave birth to the Messiah. That's Israel. And he seeks to destroy her. He He seeks to destroy the Jews. It also mentions in Revelation chapter 16 that God actually calls all these nations, apparently through demonic spirits, calls them all to this place of the world. All the armies of the world are gathered together against Israel to destroy Israel. Again, when you look at world events, it doesn't take too much imagination to see that that would be a very real possibility. Again, the anti-Semitism that marked Europe, you know, just, you know, 75 years ago, you know, during World War II, is still very much active and growing worldwide. Okay, it's not hidden. And the Jews themselves are feeling that. Now, there's a third event which takes place, and I won't say a lot about this, but there is a third event that also has to do with the Middle East and the last days, which is a little bit debated as to when it takes place, but it's given in a lot of detail in Ezekiel 38 and 39. And it's an invasion of Israel from the north. Gog and Magog, have you heard of this invasion? There's an invasion that's described in great detail in those two chapters. And I personally, again, I'm not going to, you know, some of these things, you know, you hold with humility because, you know, we don't know until it happens, I suppose, exactly how it will happen. But as best as I can tell, it seems to me that belongs at the end of the millennium. That's equivalent to Revelation 20, where it talks about the very end of the millennium. There is a rebellion. There are several reasons I would connect it with that. And I may say a little bit about that tonight, but again, I observe the fact that there are a lot of people that equate that or try to place that invasion just before the rapture or just before this peace treaty that I'm talking about. Some people place it in the tribulation, and then there are some people that have it in the millennium. Again, I won't be dogmatic, but you understand, again, if you look at this, and we'll look at this, in this invasion, there are several powers that are aligned against Israel. Notably, Gog and Magog, which is historically generally agreed upon, is Russia. It's in the far north. It's that region of the world. And Persia, and of course, Persia is modern day Iran. Okay, so there are some again. You have to understand, in the background, constantly in the Middle East conflict, in the background is always Russia. Because you understand, Russia has supplied the military might of most of these countries. They're supplying all those nations, okay, that are against Israel. When they invade, they usually invade with Russian tanks and planes and ammunition and training and so forth. Russia is always that power that's in the background. So that is significant, that it speaks of Russia invading the land. So now let me go through them, again, just briefly, each one of them. And I'll probably spend the most time in the first one because that's the one that's most significant for us as we look at what's going on in the Middle East. Where is this all ending up? It is going to end up in a peace treaty. And in fact, there will be this feeling that we have finally reached world peace. Okay, isn't that what we're all working toward? Isn't that what Jimmy Carter's all about? And all these, you know, all these men, even Dennis Rodman, right? And isn't he over there in Korea talking to the? How did Dennis Rodman go over to North Korea? I don't know. He's been over there a couple times talking to the leader of North Korea. You know who Dennis Rodman is, right? Basketball player. But anyway, a former basketball player. But you know, all that to say, we. I lost my total train of thought. When we look at all these things that are happening, okay, that's where it's going to end up. It's going to end up in a peace treaty between Israel and this world power. Now, I want to develop this a little bit without going into too much detail. I don't want to my goal is not to prove everything on this chart or explain everything in detail, but I do want to kind of just help you understand where this comes from, why we believe this is how it begins. And we read in Daniel chapter 7, if you're not there, you can turn there, Daniel chapter 7. And let me just explain briefly what God is doing through the book of Daniel, at least in part. Daniel is the one prophecy in the Old Testament that speaks to the issue of when in regard to the kingdom. Okay? You have to understand that. It's the only prophecy in the Old Testament that speaks to the question of when. Now, we cannot know for certain, we can't know when Christ is going to come because there is a unspecified gap, revealed in Daniel, by the way. But there are other things that are stated in the book of Daniel that give us an understanding in regard to the nature of the time. So what Daniel does, or what God does, is God gives Daniel a vision. You remember in the most famous vision in the book is of a statue, right? Remember Nebuchadnezzar had a dream and he saw a statue with a head of gold, chest of silver and so forth, and then it came down to two legs of iron, and then it had feet made of clay and iron mingled. The toes were clay, and there were 10 toes, right? Now that was fundamentally a picture of what? Well, that's the end of it, yeah. Fundamentally, it's a picture of all the kingdoms of the world. I mean, it's really, if you will, a summary of world history until Christ returns, until Christ comes. The last kingdom mentioned, the fourth kingdom, is generally understood to be Rome. Okay? It was Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Those were the four that were revealed. And those 10 toes at the bottom, okay, remember what happened to the statue? What's that? The rock hit, and the statue crumbled, and the stone filled the whole earth. Now, think second coming. That was the second coming of Christ. The second coming of Christ is when Christ returns the stone and completely demolishes all the kingdoms of the world. Those kingdoms, called in the New Testament, the time of the Gentiles. It's like when God has allowed these rebel kingdoms to rule. And when Christ returns, who's going to be ruling? Something to do with those 10 toes. The 10 toes at the bottom of the statue represent the political scenario at the end. Now, you have to understand, that's the setting then, or that's the pre-understanding, if you will, when you come to chapter 7, and now he gives a vision to Daniel, where Daniel has a vision of four beasts, right? They all represent kingdoms. They're the same kingdoms that were represented in the statue. Now, the fourth beast is Rome, okay? Now, again, go back. I'm going to read this again, which I read earlier. Look at chapter 7, verse 19. I'm going to explain this to you briefly as I read it. So then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And the meaning of the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and before which 3 of them fell, namely that horn which had eye and mouth uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. Let me just stop there and point out this beast, which represents Rome, has 10 horns. Those 10 horns are 10 kings who are equivalent to the 10 toes. When Christ returns, he's going to destroy this 10-toed kingdom, okay? It's going to, at that point, okay, that's what it's going to be. So, out of those 10 kingdoms, or out of those 10 kings, will come one. one horn. He's called here the little horn. He comes out of three of the kings. He roots out three of the kings, and he actually takes over. And by the way, Revelation speaks of this too. But at any rate, that one horn is the Antichrist. He is the world ruler when Christ returns. That's who he'll destroy with the breath of his mouth, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Now look at verse 21. He says, I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them. And the saints are indeed, there are going to be saints in the tribulation, right? But I think it's especially referring to the Jewish people. But verse 22, it says, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. In other words, that's the second coming of Christ. So he's going to rule until Christ returns. Now, verse 23, it says, thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms, and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the ten horns, out of this kingdom, ten kings will arise, and another will rise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue three kings. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. Now that phrase, time, singular, times, plural, and half a time, is the Arabic way of saying 3.5 years. I mean, that's not really a mystery. I mean, that's what the Arabic way of saying 3.5 years. So in other words, he will reign for 3.5 years. Okay? But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. I'll stop there. The point is, Daniel focuses on the idea that at the end of the age, just before the kingdom comes to being, that kingdom that Christ brings when he comes to earth, the second time when he comes to earth, that kingdom, just before that kingdom, there will be these ten kings, and out of those ten kings will come one king who for 3.5 years will rule the whole earth. That kingdom is explained in much more detail in Revelation, particularly chapter 13, where it describes that one king, that little horn. That man who is called in the book of in Revelation 13, he's called the beast. Okay? He's called the lawless one or the man of sin in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Now, that's kind of background to what I want to show you now, chapter 9. And I'm not going to go through the 70 weeks of Daniel because it's too complicated to cover in 1 5-minute session. So, but what I want to observe the fact is in Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27, it speaks of the timing of this coming. In other words, it speaks of this kingdom, which is the second coming of Christ, as there being 70 weeks of years from a certain point to a certain point. And that comes out to 490 years, right? Well, the first 69 weeks were fulfilled to the day when? Well, it was related to his first coming, you're right. What specific event? Coming into the triumphal entry. In fact, it's interesting to observe, and we're going to see this in Matthew when we get there. We're getting closer now. We're only a couple chapters away. But when we get there, we're going to look at Daniel's 70th week because it's significant how much in the Passion Week, it's amazing actually how much Jesus refers to these verses in Daniel 9:24-27. He knows what he's doing. He comes into that day. He comes into the city on that day. He is fulfilling the 69th week. But then there is a gap that still is in existence, a gap between the 69th week and the 70th week. And within that gap was the fall of Jerusalem, which is prophesied here, referred to by Jesus in Matthew 24. Within that gap was the crucifixion itself, which is also in here. But notice verse 27 of Daniel 9. This is the beginning of the 70th week. This is why we call it the 70th week of Daniel. He says, and he is referring to the prince that will come, namely the Antichrist. Okay? Who is referred back in verse 26. It says, he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. That's 1 week of years. In other words, there will be a 7-year peace treaty that this prince, this little horn, will make with, I believe, the Jewish nation. That's the context. This is all relating to the nation of Israel. But in the middle of the week, what's the middle of 7 years? 3.5 years. In the middle of the week, that's the center point of the tribulation, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. What does that imply? That there was a temple in Jerusalem. Okay? Now, then it says, and on the wing of abomination will come he who makes desolate, even until complete destruction, one that is decreed is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Now, that's a very complicated verse, and I'm not going to go into all the details of it. It's very interesting, but the point is this. It's speaking of what is called in the New Testament the, do you know? Jesus spoke of it. The abomination of desolation. Now, the abomination of desolation is when the Antichrist actually sets himself up in the temple as God. Spoken of in 2 Thessalonians 2 and Revelation 13. He will be worshipped as God. Now, it implies that there's a temple built. By the way, there are other implications. There are other things in the Bible, particularly in Revelation chapter 11, where it is implied that in the time of the tribulation, there is a temple rebuilt in Jerusalem. What would happen if the Jews would try to build a temple right now on the Temple Mount? Yeah, there'd be World War III. Why? Okay, there's two mosques on the Temple Mount, right? And one particularly, the Dome of the Rock, is right on where the temple goes, where the temple is going to be built, right? So if the Jews, and by the way, do the Jews want to build a temple? Yeah, and the Orthodox Jews have been wanting to build a temple for a time. They are ready to build a temple. They have trained priests. They are ready to go, okay? The only problem is if they would build a temple, that would be World War III. So, again, this is this is making inferences. It seems to me pretty logical that the peace treaty will allow them to build a temple. Now, so all that to say, and this is why I say it seems to me that there's going to have to be a major change in order for that to take place. And that may well be a war. Okay. In other words, for the Muslim nations, the Arab nations of the Middle East, to actually come to the place where they would allow Israel to build a temple on the Temple Mount, seems to me would require for the Arab nations basically to, you know, be from a political perspective to be taken off the scene, whatever that means. That seems to me to imply there'll be a war. That will end and that will end this conflict, at least it will seem to end this conflict, and will enable them actually to build a temple. That is, I believe, what all of this going on in the Middle East is going to lead to. Somewhere. Again, I'm not a prophet. I'm not here to say when. I'm not here to say it's going to happen in so many years. I don't know when it's going to happen. But it is all leading toward this peace treaty that will allow the nation of Israel actually to build a temple. Now, the fact that all this, you know, everything over there is pointing toward the fact that, A, there is a major war coming soon, eventually. It has to. Okay? I mean, we know it's coming. Okay, there is going to be some kind of a war over there that will result in Israel finally seeming to have peace and will be able to actually build a temple. In the middle of that tribulation is the abomination of desolations, when the Antichrist will actually set himself up as king. And at that point, he will set himself up as world ruler, but also as God. He will demand worship and the worship of Satan. And at that point, he turns on Israel. I mean, he breaks his covenant with Israel, his covenant of peace, and actually pursues the destruction of the nation of Israel. And the Antichrist will actually set up his throne, his kingdom, in Jerusalem. See, everything is pointing to Jerusalem. Everything is pointing to the nation of Israel. It will come down to that. Now, turn for just a moment to 1 Thessalonians 5. Because I think this is describing the same thing, more or less. In other words, the beginning of the tribulation. Now, if you'll notice, the rapture is described in chapter 4. And let me just read verse 16. It says, "For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain will be" what? Caught up. You know what that word means? You know what that word has resulted in? The word of rapture. You know, again, people say, well, the rapture isn't in the Bible. Well, actually, it is. That's right there. Caught up. That's the word. It means rapture. It means caught up. Okay? When Christ comes, yes. This is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 16 and 17. I'm sorry, I want to get to chapter 5, but I want you to see that the rapture takes place before chapter 5. It says, "Then we who are alive and remain will be caught up together with him in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so will we always be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words." Notice Christ never touches down here. We go up to be with him. Okay. Now, verse 5, chapter 5, verse 1, he says, "Now, as to the times and the epochs, brethren, you have no need of anything to be written to you, for you yourselves know full well that the day of the Lord will come just like a thief in the night." The day of the Lord is the day of judgment, the day of wrath, which will begin, I believe, shortly after the rapture. Notice what he says in verse 3. "While they are saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly, like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape." In other words, it seems to me that the tribulation period is going to begin with peace. The world is going to come to the place where they finally will feel like they have realized their goal of peace. That we have reached a new era, a new world order, a new era of peace. But it's going to change drastically and very quickly. Okay. Turn over one more passage, Revelation chapter 6. This describes the beginning of this time period. This is the first seal that is opened by Christ when he opens the title, I believe, is the title deed to the earth. He's claiming the earth for himself over these next 7 years. And notice the first seal, verse 1 of chapter 6. "Then I saw when the Lamb broke one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice of thunder, 'Come.' I looked, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer." There are many who would argue that what takes place here is a peace. That basically this first war horse, or this first horse, this white horse, is peace. There is a peace that is created. Now the reason that sometimes, and I tend to agree with what they're saying, the reason this is sometimes understood is look at verse 3 then, and 4. "When he broke the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, 'Come,' and another, a red horse, went out, And to him who sat on it, it was granted to take peace from the earth, which implies to me there was peace. Okay, so, and then it says, and the men would slay one another, and a great sword was given to him. In other words, the second seal is all-out war. The first seal is peace. I think that's related to the peace treaty of Daniel, Daniel 9:27. That this tribulation period will begin with peace. So all this talk about one worldism and one world religion and one world government and one world economics, I think will come to a seeming fruition in some way, shape, or form at the very beginning of the tribulation. And then it will be turned into chaos. And then eventually the Antichrist will actually rule over the whole world. Now, does anybody have any questions about what I said? Well, again, I'm not a prophet, so, you know, there's no clear reference to the United States in prophecy. I don't know. I mean, I just say I don't know. It does seem to me that without question, at the end, there is seems to be an emphasis back on Europe. Again, I don't want to get into what could happen or what might happen. I'll just say this about America. Whatever happens, and whenever the return of the Lord is, and whatever America's role is in the end, I'll just say this. I mean, just based on what we're doing as a nation, we really are already, I think, under judgment. But I think Americans are living truly in a dream world. We are living in a dream world. This dream is about ready to end. I hope you realize that. people say, oh, you're a doomsdayer. Yeah, I am. Because I know what happens to nations that do what we're doing. The same thing has always happened to nations that do what we're doing. When you have a nation that destroys the foundation of all things moral and all things godly, I know the end of that nation. And I'll give it to you in one word. Totalitarianism. We will lose our freedom very soon. Say, well, that's negative. Yeah, it is negative. Well, hopefully we'll be out of here before then. I mean, I don't know. I really think the Lord will return. But I rather suspect that our destruction will be rather quick and rather devastating. But, where that fits into the end, I don't know, and I'm not here to say. I am here to say that I do think God will judge this nation severely for this simple reason. There has never been a nation in the world that has had the light that we have, ever, except for maybe, obviously, the nation of Israel. And look what God did with her. Yes? It could be. Yeah, it may be. I mean, I will say this also about the nation of Israel, about America, the United States. There is no nation in the world that has done more to move us toward the New World Order than the United States. I mean, I hope you realize the United States government is fundamentally moving the world toward a New World Order. They say it themselves. I mean, George Bush used to say it himself. Okay? I mean, they are moving toward the New World Order. We are fundamentally a part of this system. We're not a Christian nation. Hope you realize that. Yes. Correct. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Definitely. If it happens, any time in the near future, somehow America will be involved. I mean, and there's several ways you can look at it. Again, we don't want to get into too much speculation beyond what Scripture says, but truly, from a human perspective right now, if there were no America, there would be no... Again, from a human perspective, we know God is providentially over all these things, but America is really the one that keeps Israel on the map. And, of course, the Arabs know that too, right? That's why they hate America, at least one reason. So... You know, there are several scenarios that could, you know, that could involve America. So, again, I don't want to say one or the other. It helps us, these things help us to see where potentially these events in the Middle East are going, help us to see, you know, from a biblical perspective, hopefully. Any other questions or comments? The fact that God has used America greatly in his plan, he has. I mean, world missions from the standpoint of the last 200 years. There was a while it was Britain, and then we really have been the major means through which God has spread the gospel through the world. God has blessed America in many respects, but you have to understand that our government fundamentally is working toward this system. Let me just briefly again say a couple words about the other two events, I wasn't going to say much about these because the first one I think is really what helps us see what's going on today in the Middle East. So as you realize that everything is working towards this peace treaty, everything is working towards this time when Israel will have a seeming time of peace and will be able to build their temple. And that will set the stage then for the Antichrist. Okay, so that's kind of helps us a little bit understand what's going on over there. But then the second thing is the Battle of Armageddon, or really the third thing, I guess, if you go back to the regathering of Israel. The third thing is the Battle of Armageddon. And let me just, again, I'm not going to read all these passages, but look at Zechariah chapter 14. I know I've read this, but just read the first couple verses, because this is really what sets the stage for the end. Zechariah 14:1 says, "Behold, a day is coming for the Lord when the spoil taken from you will be divided among you, for I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle. And the city will be captured, the houses plundered, the women ravished, and half the city exiled, but the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as when he fights on a day of battle. In that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives." That's the second coming of Christ. That is fundamentally the nations gathered against Jerusalem. And that will be the climax of the tribulation period. The tribulation will end with that battle when they all are gathered and God will deliver them. Revelation 19 is the second half of Revelation 19 is the Battle of Armageddon. It's the second coming of Christ. It's all around the Middle East and the events of the Middle East. Now turn, if you will, and we'll look at just again, we'll just mention the last event, and that is in Ezekiel 38, the invasion from the north. I'm not going to read Ezekiel 38 and 39. You can read them for yourself. I will read the first few verses, but do you remember chapter 37 we read last time? And chapter 37 is the Valley of Dry Bones. And what happens in the Valley of Dry Bones? What's that a picture of? Do you remember? Israel coming together, right? And actually coming to life. And chapter 38 follows that. So logically, it's following the resurrection of Israel. And then at the end of chapter 37, it actually describes the millennial kingdom. Now in chapter 38, it says this, verse 1, "And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face toward Gog of the land Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal, and prophesy against him. And say, Thus says the Lord God, Behold, I am against you, O Gog, prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal." This generally is understood to refer to what is currently, again, the far north, Russia. It says, "I will turn you about and put hooks into your jaws, and I will bring you out, and all your army, horses and horsemen, all of them splendidly attired, a great company will buckler with buckler and shield, all of them wielding swords. Persia," which again is Iran, "Ethiopia and Put with them, all of them with shield and helmet, Gomer with all its troops, Beth Togomor, Togorma, I can't pronounce that, from the from the remote parts of the north with all its troops, many peoples with you. Be prepared and prepare yourself, you and all your companies that are assembled about you, and be a guard for them. After many days you will be summoned. In the latter years you will come into the land that is restored from the sword, whose inhabitants have been gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel. That's obviously referring to the regathering of Israel to the land, which had been a continual waste, but its people were brought out from the nations, and they are living securely, all of them. What does that sound like? It sounds like the nation of Israel in the millennium. It says, you will go up, you will come like a storm, you will be like a cloud covering the land, and you and all your troops and many people with you. It speaks about them a little later on as coming up against the cities that have no walls. And the point is that they're living in peace. Now, there are people that try to put this, again, different various locations for a couple of fundamental reasons. I believe it's referring to the end of the millennium. For this simple reason, it seems to be a time when Israel is living in peace and has been regathered and is in the land. Turn to Revelation. This will be the last passage. Turn to Revelation 20. Remember, Satan is bound for 1,000 years. And this time is recorded in Revelation 20, verses 1 through 6, where there will be peace on the earth. The Messiah will rule from Jerusalem on the throne of David. And then notice what it says in verse 7. When the 1,000 years are completed, Satan will be released from his prison and will come out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog. So he actually mentions Gog and Magog. To gather them together for the war, the number of them is like the sand of the seashore, and they came up on the broad plain of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city, which would be Jerusalem, and fire came down from heaven and devoured them. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophets are also, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. That, I believe, is referring to the same thing in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Now, so those three events, at the beginning of the tribulation, at the end of the tribulation, and at the end of the millennium, everything is surrounding the nation of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. So all these events in the Middle East have great significance because they're pointing us toward this end. And of course, God is going to show his power in all these things. And it's amazing to me that there will be a rebellion at the end of the millennium after all these things will have been fulfilled, including the tribulation itself, including the second coming, and Christ coming and reigning on the earth, and they will still rebel against the Lord. It's amazing the stubbornness of man's unbelief. Man can see all these things come to pass and still reject God. Okay. Any questions or comments? Daniel. I believe, again, I wouldn't be dogmatic on how to understand it. I would say this, that as you see them in the book of Revelation, it's like a telescope. You have the six seals, and then the seventh seal, when it's opened, what comes out? The trumpets. And then when the seventh trumpet is blown, you have the seven bowls of wrath. When I studied it out, my understanding was, and again, I won't be dogmatic, and I'm not sure I could right now, this very moment, off the top of my head, defend it, but as I recall, my understanding of it was that the six seals take place in the first half of the tribulation and are parallel with Matthew, the first part of Matthew 24. And it seemed obvious to me that the bowls of wrath were right at the end. But again, with all these things, to answer your question, I think it covers the whole tribulation, when you take all of them together. Technically, when you think about it, the last bowl is part of the last seal, because it all came out of the seventh seal. So if I can put it this way, I believe the first six seals are in the first half of the tribulation. But again, I'm not going to be dogmatic. We have to be careful. We're not, you know, there's a lot we don't understand, and I'm not going to pretend that I understand it all, but that's how I would understand it. Any other questions? You mean in terms of what they believe?
Yeah, are they going to deal with Daniel at all?
Yeah, no, they are looking. Orthodox Jews, at least some of them, are looking for what I'm describing, because they have the same prophecies we have. In other words, they read Zechariah 14, and they read Joel chapter 3, and they read Daniel chapter 2 and chapter 7, and they would see the same thing I see, that the Messiah is going to deliver them from the nations. The difference is, I know the Messiah. See, they don't. They don't know it's Christ. They don't believe it's Jesus Christ. They do believe, again, not most Jews, Orthodox Jews believe the Messiah will deliver them. And do they see that the storm clouds are gathering against the nation of Israel? Yes. In fact, even in the Israel itself, you know, Netanyahu, I think he has a Bible study. They realize the biblical significance of what's happening and of their situation. And when you look at the history of the last 75 years or so of the nation of Israel, it's a miracle that they have survived. I mean, really, when you look at these wars that they've been in, the Six-Day War and the Yom Kippur War in 1973, it is truly a miracle of God that they have survived. I mean, when you look at the numbers, you say, how in the world does Israel remain there? We can say, well, it has to do with the United States. Well, yes and no. I mean, we have something to do with it in a certain level, but they are truly surrounded by nations that are dedicated to their destruction and have tried to destroy them. So, I don't know where I was going with that. Did I answer your question? Well, because they believe. What's that? Well. Okay. Yeah. Well, they. Well, yeah. No, they don't believe in the New Testament. Yeah. Well, I don't know if they would understand the 70 weeks. In the way that we do. I don't know how they understand Daniel 9.
Because they don't use Revelation.
Well, and they don't believe in the church.
Right.
So, I'm not sure how they understand Daniel 9. Understand Daniel 9, 24 through 27. Yeah, I'm not sure how they would understand that. So, but they certainly, it is interesting to look at that question of the little horn. I mean, certainly they have that revelation that there's going to be an Antichrist that will deceive them. So it's an interesting question. I'm not sure I could answer that. But they do believe the nations are going to be gathered against them, and that the Messiah will deliver them. I mean, the Orthodox. And the Orthodox are looking for that today. Who's building the temple? Who wants to build the temple? The Orthodox Jews. Yeah, I mean, they are the ones that want to build the temple and restore sacrifices and so forth. So I think they will do it. Okay, well, let's close with a song. And again, next week or next time, we will consider, Lord willing, just go through that conflict, the history of that Middle East conflict. And again, hopefully giving you a certain amount of perspective on what's going on over there. Nothing like history to give you perspective on what's happening today. All right, let's turn to hymn number 712. And you can stand as we sing this final hymn. whatever happens in the world, one thing we can be assured of, that we belong to Christ and that our hope is in Him. So let's sing, I Know Whom I Have Believed, and we'll just sing first, the second, and the last verses.